Welcome back to Coast. Hi, this is Lisa Gar. I'm your host for the evening. And I've guest hosted Coast to Coast a couple of times, and I've heard from you via email, and I absolutely love that. I love hearing from you guys. So feel free, email me, comments, questions. Lisa Gar at coasttocoastam.com. Very cool. They gave me an email address, so then I get to hear from you. So let me ask you a question. Are you familiar with some of the new sciences out there? They're emerging from cutting edge scientists. They're creating massive shifts in the fields of biomedical sciences. You heard of the butterfly effect back in the 60s that posed the question, you know, does the flap of a butterfly's wings in Brazil set off a tornado in Texas, right? Well, that same question, when asked, applies to the human body. Does a single thought affect the trillions of cells in the human body? Does a positive thought affect the cells positively? Does a negative thought affect the cells negatively? And the answer is yes, according to Dr. Bruce Lipton, who's going to be joining me tonight. He's an internationally recognized authority in bridging science and spirit. And I have interviewed Bruce 18 times in my career. I just looked back at that when I was looking up. I do a radio show called The Aware Show, and I've been doing it for 8 years. And I looked back and looked in my calendar section, and I've interviewed him 18 times. I obviously really like this guy. I like what he talks about because it's so how I like to live. And I catch myself negative thinking patterns all the time. And then I see what happens when I have those crisis victimhood thoughts. Things start going downhill. And sometimes it's hard to change and to shift. But when you do it and you start to do it over and over again, and you see the results, then you start to say, hey, maybe this stuff works. Who knows? So Bruce Lipton is the man who talks, who really basically brought us this really, really great research on a cellular biological level about how our perceptions and how our beliefs directly affect the behavior of the cell. So positive thoughts, the cell goes into regeneration and growth. Negative thoughts, the cell actually starts to break down, degenerate, and those types of cells are the ones that become cancerous. Those are the ones that cancers feed off of. So when we come back, we're going to find out if these new sciences really can take us from victims to creators in our lives. So we'll be right back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Gar. So let me ask you a question. If you could be anybody, who would you be? Who would you be if you could just be anybody? Pick them. I give myself these labels like I have ADD or I wish I could be as focused as this person or that person, and I would be so much further in my life if I was more focused. So I can, you know, do we come up with excuses as to why we're not happy or why our life doesn't work, and you find yourself comparing yourself to others and so forth? I have this inner baseball bat that I use every now and then just to, you know, give myself a sufficient, oh, this didn't work for you. You're not good enough. Do you have that you're not good enough inner baseball bat? Well, cellular biologist Dr. Bruce Lipton says that our perceptions, those inner thoughts and all of that of our environment directly controls the activity of our genes. So regardless of what side of the tracks you were born on, what your family history is, what you believe ultimately is what affects your reality. This is what the new sciences are saying, that they can actually take us from victim to creator in our lives. So I want to find out more about this. I want you to find out more about this. Welcome to the show, Dr. Bruce Lipton.
Hello, Lisa. Thanks for this opportunity to talk on this wonderful network. I travel around the country a lot, and I can't believe how many times I bump into coast-to-coast people. And it's interesting because even though it's pretty late at night for most people, they're really wide-awake audience. So
Yes,
I appreciate having this opportunity.
in more ways than one, awake too in their perceptions of the world
That's
because.
exactly what I'm talking about.
Because
they're not you know, sleepwalking through it. They're looking around and seeing something's going on, and I'm glad they are, because too many people are just walking through this very interesting time that we're going through right now, and not seeing that what's unfolding, that there is something unfolding. And for me, it's very exciting because most people think about this future unfolding, and it's, you know, it's like dark and scary, and they're being afraid of this, and it's an unfortunate situation, because when you start to buy into that fear, that will actually paralyze you in a sense in your biology. And what's really interesting is that there's a far better understanding of what's going on, because we are indeed going through a very important phase right here. It's an evolution phase. And what it's sort of like is the story of the butterfly or the phoenix that goes through a life, and then just when it looks like it's dying, all of a sudden there's this rebirth in a better form.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's happening, is that the form that civilization is in right now is undergoing this change into something so beautiful that it's even hard to talk about, because it's an exciting, it's just beautiful future for us.
Great. So, I mean, let's start from what I was talking about in the beginning briefly. When you discovered this principle that the cells relate or react to the environment, when did you discover this? How did that occur for you?
Well, it was back in 40 years ago. I was cloning stem cells, and it's really interesting because I didn't realize how long ago it was until I just wrote it down just a little while ago, because everyone talks about stem cells like there's something that new just came from someplace.
Oh, yes.
And I was actually cloning these stem cells 40 years ago. And what I found out, when you clone a stem cell, is you take out this, let me just tell you what stem cells are, because stem cells represent the equivalent of embryonic cells. And every one of us right now, our bodies are filled with stem cells. The function of the stem cells is to replace any of the old aging or damaged cells and tissues in the system to keep it running and keep it strong and actually keep it young.
Do we produce less and less over time?
No. The stem cells?
Yeah.
No, they're being stimulated by the need. So all of a sudden it says, well, the problem that we have, and this is what we're going to get into tonight, is that our perceptions, our beliefs about the world are broadcast to our cells. Our cells are like miniature people, and this is a really interesting truism, in the sense that we look at ourselves as individuals, as single entities. You know, there's Lisa, there's Bruce, but in real truth, we're not single entities. We, the living things that make us up are the cells. So in truth, we are made out of a community of cells. So we're a community, even though we see ourselves as one. There are up to 50 trillion citizens in this cellular community. And what's very interesting is in every cell, there's every function that we have. So like we have a digestive or a respiratory or a nervous system and even an immune system. These things are found in every single cell. Truth, a cell is a miniature person.
Wow. So inside of our bodies, we have 50 trillion little mini-me's running around?
They're all running around, and they're really close to mini-me's because they're cloned.
Cool.
They all represent you. And why this then becomes interesting is if you just think about it that way, and then you could put yourself into the body, you would find yourself, well, pretty much in the same world you're looking at right now, but from a cellular point of view. There are cells all around. They're your community. They live in an environment, and they all have jobs, and they get the health care for free.
So they must live in Switzerland
regularly, and so inside this body is like a miniature world that we live in right now.
Okay, do they fight?
They do if there's trouble in the community, and so then you have to say, well, how does trouble arise in the community? And the answer is this: go back to the ideas that there are cells and 50 trillion citizens in your country called your body, and here's the critical point. That there's a government that controls the expression and what happens to this population of cells, governs what's going on, and it turns out to be the mind. The thoughts that run through the mind are the equivalent of a government broadcasting to 50 trillion cells what's going on in the world, because, like, my liver cell can't see what I'm doing. You know, it's inside in there, but it knows what I'm doing and what's going on in my beliefs about the world, because my brain sends this information throughout the body, just like an internet, and connects all the cells, so all the cells know what's going on. So if I'm afraid, then the cells inside, well, they're shaking in their boots because it's sort of like the government yelling and saying, oh, my God, everything's falling apart.
Oh, that's a
great... citizen inside, you're going to go, right. Oh, you know, same thing.
That's a great analogy, Bruce,
well,
because...
It's even, you know, it's even, it's more than an analogy because, in fact, it's actually a verifiable kind of truth because these cells... Every cell in your body is programmed to connect to a central voice. That's what I call it in my book, a central voice, meaning the thought that is broadcasting like a loudspeaker through this community. And cells have the, just like we do, they can be in growth if the world is good around them,
mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
if they start to get afraid, they go into protection. And what happens to the cells in protection is the same thing that happens to us when we go in protection because we're, in fact, the equivalent of a giant cell made out of little miniature cells all coming together, just doing the same thing that every cell does anyway. So
if the head is displaying this, sending the signal of there's a war, like as if this is the macrocosm versus the microcosm thing,
yeah.
If there's a war, then the war gets distributed to the rest of the body, and then it goes into protection.
Absolutely. So the cells, even though, like, you're watching CNN, let's say, but you don't realize that what you're seeing and what you're interpreting from CNN is then rebroadcast to your community. And your cells are going to respond just the way you do. If you're afraid, they're afraid. I mean, it's sort of because if you, meaning in your own consciousness, afraid, you're the government. And just realize if the government gets afraid, then we know we're all in trouble at that point. And it's very interesting
right.
because, like a government, we can then go back and control these cells in a different way. So it was interesting because I was giving a lecture a few days ago, and just before I went to go to the lecture, there was a movie about FDR.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because there was a world in a lot of trouble at that moment. And that president got up and said, the only thing you have to fear is fear itself. And it was the thing that healed the nation because it stopped the nightmare that people were generating in their heads. And it's interesting because I said, wow, what a difference from then to now, where the government is actually propagating the fear and not shutting it off because... There's a very important consequence of being afraid. And it was interesting, if people have seen the movie Sicko, there's Tony Benn, a member of parliament in London, said there's two ways to control the population, that you do these together and then you can control them. And one of them is to make them afraid,
mm-hmm.
and the other is to demoralize them.
Fear is such a ruler. Now, what does a cell physically look like when it is in fear? Is it the same as when it's in protection?
When it's in fear, it's in protection. So what it means, just as you would do, if something was coming to attack you, you would try to wall yourself up. Here's the best example. As a matter of fact, this is the most perfect thing to understand it. Back when we had the Cold War period,
mm-hmm.
and we thought the Russians were going to bomb us, okay? So imagine there's a community, and it's just going about its business, and so you could say the community's in growth, the kids are in school, the factories are working, everything's in harmony, and it's going really great. And then all of a sudden there's an air raid drill or siren, the air raid siren. Well, that means everybody stops what they're doing, and they go into the bomb shelter.
Right.
And then you wait until the all clear, and then you come out of the bomb shelter, and if it was just a test, of course, it was just sort of like a long coffee break, then everybody goes back to work again. But here's the problem, and this is where we are today. What if there's an air raid siren, and then everybody stops their jobs and goes into the fallout shelters, right? But there's no all clear. And you wait in that shelter, and you wait. Now, think of what's going on. Number one, who's doing the jobs? You know, what's going on in the world?
It's breaking down, right?
The businesses doing their things, our factories making things. Well, in the cellular body, the growth mechanisms are stalled and shut down because they're in protection mode, which is like going into a bomb shelter. And the fact is, it was only the bomb shelter kind of thing was designed only for like running away from a saber-toothed tiger. So the tiger chases you. Okay, now you're in your fear. You run, you go someplace. But once you get away from that tiger, then you let go of the fear and you go back into growth. But in our world today, we're like continuously being chased by that invisible tiger somewhere.
Which is not around.
It's not around, but if you believe it is,
it's in our heads.
The corner behind that is that fear. So as you approach the corner, you're telling your own cells, oh, this could be it. And the cells inside will get into that protection mode. And the point is, you can't sustain protection because you're not providing for growth during that time period. And at some point, you run out of all your materials and your supplies that you put into that bomb shelter that you prepared for, but you didn't prepare for a long time. So the point is, you run out of the food in the bomb shelter. You're not making anything in the world because all the factories are stopped. And then you realize, well, you're about finished at this point.
Now, does the body restore itself, every 7 days, those trillions of cells actually replicate every 7 days?
Well, it's a very variable thing. There are cells that replicate very quickly. Here's an example. The digestive tract, the lining of the digestive tract, is replaced every 3 days. That's like billions and billions of cells. And it's interesting because if you interfere with that replacement, it causes a lot of digestive problems, tremendous digestive problems. In fact, everyone understands this. If you people that get chemotherapy, see, chemotherapy kills any cells that are dividing. It doesn't distinguish between stem cells and cancer cells. It just kills anything. And the problem is, those people on chemotherapy have tremendous problems with their digestion and their health because when they were given the chemotherapy, they stopped replacing the cells, but the cells were dying because they only last 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to a great distress. So the digestive system begins to shut down if you don't keep these cells going. 3 days for stem cells, neurons may go 100 years or more. So that means there are ranges of cells. They turn over at different times, and this is what the stem cells are for. They replace your lining every 3 days. Your skin is continuously being replaced because if you didn't replace it after about a month or two, you wouldn't have any skin left because all the cells would have died and gone. And so the reality is, stem cells have always been there, and they're always working, but the issue is then why do we have some troubles in getting them to heal our illnesses and diseases? And the issue is that the diseases are related to the government that's controlling what's going on. And it's just like what happened in New Orleans. If the government doesn't want to send any aid to New Orleans, then New Orleans is still underwater, you know?
Yes.
And this can happen to any part of our body based on what the action of that mind, the government, is involved with. So
how does all this have to do with the genetics conversation? So if you have a family history of heart disease, or if you have a family history of, you know, whatever type of illness, you know, when you go to the doctor and you have to write all of the family history there so that the doctor could look at the profile.
Well, this is, look, you have a government in training when you have a child.
Yes.
And the issue is, what's this new science that we'll probably get to, I'm sure, is a new science called epigenetic control, epigenetics. And what that means is the science that almost everybody out there in the radio audience has been familiar with all these years is a science called genetic control, which simply means control by genes. The new science, which is just revolutionizing the whole, I mean, it's the equivalent of bringing quantum physics into a Newtonian world. The new science, epigenetic control, is modifying biology upside down for this reason. The word epigenetic, epi is a prefix that means above. So when we say the word epidermis, that actually means a layer above the dermis. So epi is above.
Above the skin.
Epigenetic control reads literally control above the genes. And for what we've held for years, and still in the textbooks and still in the mass media, is the fact that, oh, genes control what we are. The new science called epigenetics says, no, it's the way you perceive the world that changes the readout of the genes, so that the genes are potentials. They're like blueprints, and the mind is a contractor. The mind can open up the blueprints and say, well, let's change this blueprint, and let's adjust this blueprint. So now this new science says that the genes don't control anything. genes are blueprints. It's the mind that determines what to do with the blueprints, so that the mind can reconstruct the body based on how it involves itself with the world, because your mind is continuously reading the world and then trying to adjust the body to match what it sees. So this is a very dynamic process. But then you just go back to our story about the bomb shelters and the air raid and the fear. If you live in fear, you adjust your body.
Well, it's like a really good pair of jeans, actually. If you put them on, then your body conforms to the really good pair of jeans, right? That's just to take it to a totally different level, Bruce. All right, when I come back, Dr. Bruce Lipton's going to discuss more about cellular consciousness. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr. And if you've just joined us, my guest is cellular biologist Dr. Bruce Lipton. We've been talking about the cellular biology of positive intention and perception. I'm a big mountain biking fan. As a matter of fact, I won the California state championship series in 2000, and I still race on the amateur level because I absolutely love mountain biking. And now the women to men ratio in mountain biking is about one woman to every 10 men, and women aren't really that well known for their descending abilities. Don't get me wrong, there's some awesome female downhillers. They're amazing. But in the amateur circuit that I'm racing in now, not so many up there. So the rule of thumb in mountain biking is, if you're approaching a really, really big rock, don't look at the rock because you're going to hit it. That took me a while to figure out after countless rocks and roots and so forth. I finally figured it out, but it's looking at the biggest obstacle that's in the way that usually takes you off your course. Isn't that the same way in life? You focus on your biggest obstacle in life, it's usually the thing that you attract, law of attraction, all that stuff. So I'm not sure if any of you guys do that. It took me flying over my handlebars several times before I really actually got that golden rule of downhill racing. And it's the idea now is to look 5 to 10 feet in front of you, constantly to be looking 5 to 10 feet in front of you, especially when you're going 20, 25 miles an hour downhill. So when we come back, we're going to continue talking about cellular consciousness with my guest, Bruce Lipton. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. And don't forget, please email me if you can, your questions and comments and stuff like that. LisaGarr@coasttocoastam.com. I'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. So early in the show, I mentioned the butterfly effect. The question is, a flap of a butterfly's wings affect a tornado in Texas if that wings happen in Brazil. So my guest is cellular biologist Dr. Bruce Lipton, and I have a question for you, Bruce. So how much do our thoughts, if we're driving down the freeway, we're frustrated with traffic, and we're late, and all these things start happening to us, how much do those thoughts of frustration and anger have to do with, say, creating a hurricane in the Gulf Coast or a tsunami in Asia?
Well, it turns out that the new understanding about how the brain operates really deals with its vibrations, and it sends out information in the field, we call it, all around us. So it sends information to our cells, but it also links us to everything else in the field. So there's something that we would call about entanglement, that everything is entangled. So even though you're far away from wherever I am right now, we're still entangled in the field. The significance is then our thoughts not only go inwards, but our thoughts are also directed outwards as well, so that we are those butterflies in the field, and that our thoughts start to influence the field. Now, where the problems come from is when you get enough different butterflies to beat at the same time to a thought that is not very positive, then that number of butterflies will collectively change the field and create whatever those thoughts are. And so it turns out that we're more or less so creating our lives that we're not just altering what's going on within our cellular community with our broadcasts inwards, but our broadcasts are collectively adding up to the expression of our outward cellular community, where the population of people. And this is why I get very, very upset about what's happening in the media and the way the government is creating a world to get enough people to believe in this fear and this war and all this stuff, because that is the primary thing that perpetuates the fear and the war. It's just enough people thinking about it. You can't have a war if everybody in the population says, I don't want to participate in that.
But the war exists, and it still does happen. It is happening.
But yeah, and but there's a lot of vested interest in doing this, and the most important vested interest is this. As long as you don't know the power you have, then you are disempowered, basically what it's all about. People talk about self-empowerment. Well, the only way to first get to self-empowerment is to know about self. And the issue that we are not being given information about is that we are powerfully controlling just not just the interior of ourselves, but what goes on in the field around us. And so it really turns out that if you feel disempowered, then you have no power. And all of us, we feel, well, we can't control our health. We can't control what goes on in our world around us, that we're victims to all these things. And that is encouraged continuously through the way the media reports, because if you're a victim, then you need a rescuer. And if you need a rescuer, then it all depends on the moral fiber and caliber of that rescuer. And I've unfortunately feel that the people that step in front to be our rescuers today are the biggest cause of all our problems. Something like the pharmaceutical industry, which is coming to rescue our health, is creating more sickness than anything else in this world. So this is what we have to start to recognize. We are more powerful than anybody has let us know. And why? And you say, well, who cares if they let me know it or not, if I'm powerful? Then we go back to your perception controls your biology.
Now, can you really, though, if you have cancer, can you really perceive that you're not going to have cancer and think the cancer away?
Yeah, it's actually, this is the foundation of what's called a spontaneous remission. There's one common underlying characteristic of everybody that has expressed spontaneous remission, and that is they change their mind. They're saying, I'm not putting up with this stuff, or I'm not buying it. Not that I wish this wasn't happening. No, it's not happening.
Okay, so it's got to be strong.
It's a wish and a belief.
Yeah, no, it has to be a strong intention, a very strong. What is the percentage of spontaneous remissions? Do you know, Bruce?
Not exactly, and it's real hard to say because it probably occurs most of the time before you even knew you had the cancer. And because there's, in the sense, cancer, like on a daily basis, because we get billions and billions of cells dividing, inevitably, just like cars come off assembly line, some of the cars are what we call lemons. And when cells divide, something happens that some of the cells become so-called lemons. Our normal immune system function is to eliminate those and keep the body clear of that. But if you interfere with that immune function, then it's sort of like you take away the environmental protection agency that's looking after the environment. And when you cut back on the inspectors, then all of a sudden those polluters out there get free run of whatever they want to pollute, and nobody can see it until it's too late. The immune system is like the environmental protection agency inside the body. And the nature is this: if you start living in fear, the immune system is actually shut down. And it's shut down because the hormones, the same stress hormones that are released in a fear when a person's afraid or in protection, those same stress hormones shut down the immune system to this effect that doctors, when they transplant an organ or a tissue into somebody and they don't want the person to reject the graft, will actually give the patient stress hormones so that it shuts off their immune system so that they don't reject the graft. Well, it's like, okay, well, that's a technical use of those stress hormones, but how about all of us in the audience out here that are being stressed day by day by what's going on? You don't realize that the secondary consequence of that stress in the biology is that when you're stressed, you're shutting off your immune system, you're shutting off your environmental protection agency, you're losing the watchdog coverage of making sure your community's in a good state of health. That's when things start to break down.
Now, isn't that what aging is with the body? I mean, there's environmental stressors out there that we don't really know about. Coffee is one of them, and alcohol and sugar and dairy that just constantly come into our bodies without us knowing these things are environmental stressors. Isn't that kind of what aging is? Just
Well, aging, again, it's a collection of thoughts as well. It's our perception that we must age. That's a belief. That's a belief that's put into us when we're very young, that you watch people around you and everyone is always telling you about, yes, you're going to age, and watch people age, watch your grandfather get older, and you learn this. And now, how does life work? Well, your mind controls your biology, and your mind says, okay, at a certain age, then you start to decline. And so if that's the belief, then the body will conform to the belief. And this is what people don't really catch as an important point. The mind and body are in strict connection with each other. If the mind says die, the body will die, even if it has nothing wrong with it.
Mm.
And the mind shapes the body. And therefore, we have to understand that our thoughts always shape what we can do. And it's just interesting, because if your thoughts tell you that you're weak, then you become so. The perfect examples are people that walk across hot coals. They don't have any doubt in their mind that that's not, they're going to walk across without getting burned.
That is the power of the mind. It's amazing. You know what? I have a little 4.5-year-old, and she always looks at me and she goes, Mommy, I want to be a big girl. And first thing that comes out of my mouth is, oh, honey, you don't want all the responsibilities of an adult. And it's like the programming is going right in right now, because she's like, I want to be a big girl. I want to go to work.
This is a start, you know, and this is the selling to children of a world, and this is an unfortunate part, the selling to children through television and that media that shapes the generation. I mean, you could look, kids become the fad of whatever is being sold, the kids become, and that there's a real power in this, because when we thought genes control life, then we just said, well, your problems are just because your genes, you know, it's in your genes. But we now recognize, no, the genes don't control it. It's our perception that controls it. And if we change these perceptions, then we are changing the information and then selecting different genetic expressions. It's interesting, identical twins, when they're born, came from the same genes. And you would expect them to be genetically identical. Well, when they're born, they're different, actually. They have different readouts from their genes. But what science has revealed is that every day of their life, their personal experiences change their genetic expression. So if you come back and look at twins and look at their genes like a year after they're born and 10 years after they're born or 20 years after they're born, you'll see that during that time period, their gene programs are profoundly different in each of the twins based on the life experiences of those twins.
That goes back to the Freudian theory, right, about the perception. 0 to 7 years old, that imprint period, if one child can look at a parent arguing and see that as a twist, as something that is a horrible sexual experience, and that imprints them for the rest of their lives. And then, of course, the twin that didn't see that has a totally different experience. And so then
that's exactly what it's about, because the mind has this memory component to it. And what it does, it's like a television system. Your eyes are the cameras, and they're recording. And then you've got TiVo in there, and you're recording all this stuff. Because the nature of the system is to learn what goes on in the world, so that if you experience it again, the same conditions, you're already prepared from your history to know what to do the next time. So once you learn a program, the system files these like videotapes, in a sense. There's a file based on the experiences of life, and if certain conditions in the world show up, it's almost like a jukebox. The conditions push the buttons, and all of a sudden the tape comes out of the memory, and then you play the tape. And so that your life from your first six or so years of your life sets up the programming for the rest of your life, because once you get the basic experiences down, then you always go back to these basic experiences when conditions in your life bring up very similar stimuli.
So was Freud right?
Well, no, Freud wasn't right in this regard, because it's not a negative situation. So the subconscious mind, it's got a bad rap, you know. It's always like, oh, that's where all the evil comes from, the subconscious mind.
Right.
In fact, the subconscious mind is a tape player. When you're born, it's actually been pre-programmed a bit, because the last half of pregnancy is programming even personality.
In the womb, in utero?
In utero, it's already half of the personality is already programmed by the day you're born.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And,
yes.
And this becomes a, you know, this is a big issue because the subconscious is just basically a tape player. It doesn't have any bad programs or any good programs. It acquires programs. And so the subconscious is a reflection of the life experiences, and they start real early. As I said, they start in utero. So many of the experiences that are programmed us, we don't even have conscious awareness of. So we're running from programs that we don't even see. So this becomes really difficult. In fact, if we had time, and I would really love to get into it because this is the crux of the issue.
And go ahead. There's a video you're going to get to that you're going to talk about, right?
Well, not really. I was just going to talk about the crux of the issue is that we run our lives 95% of the day with a subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the habitual programs that we acquired from our experiences. And it works invisibly to our conscious mind. Our conscious mind doesn't observe it. The two work together. Conscious can focus and do anything, but it can't do everything. The subconscious mind is a million times more powerful, can run the whole biology and everything. So the point is, whatever the conscious mind is focusing on, the subconscious job is to do everything else. And the issue is, the subconscious is based on the programs, and you don't see them when they're playing. So, for example, if you know somebody, and you know their parent, and you see this person and their parent share the same behaviors, and then you happen to volunteer to your friend, you say, you know, Mary, you're just like your mom, and then you back away because Mary's going to like, what are you talking about?
Right, exactly. The apple doesn't fall very far from the tree, but it's true. It actually
does.
But,
the important lesson for the audience is this. Everybody else can see that Mary behaves like her mom, and Mary is shocked that people say she behaves like her mom. This is a teaching point. What does it mean? She cannot see the programs that are playing automatically that she got from her mom. So half of her life she's running these programs. Everybody else sees them. She doesn't.
Right.
And if you don't see the program and the program controls your life, then you have to ask the question is the program that I got, especially from 0 to 6, one that supports my health and my vitality, or is it one that disempowers me? And I can assure you, I would say almost everybody in this audience, including myself, we were provided with disempowering programs that habitually work, that we can't see them. And when you can't see a disempowering program or a sabotaging program, and you don't see that you're involved with it, then you say, well, my life turned out different than what I wanted because this is what I wanted and I didn't get it. And you didn't see that you were sabotaging yourself because it was invisible. Then you blame, you know, it's like the world didn't give it to me and I'm, you know, I'm a victim.
Now, is this how that relates to the genetics and how we see our parents going through diseases and illness and obesity and that type of thing comes down? Is that how, is that?
A quick point about that. People talk about cancer runs in family. Of course it runs in families. But here was the interesting twist. They looked at a number of children who were adopted into cancer families when they were very young and ended up having the same cancer, the propensity of getting the cancer just like any other child in the family. And these were adopted kids. They came from genetically different people. They didn't have the cancer running in their family. The point was, getting into the family set up the perception that ultimately result in the cancer. That's why cancers run in families more or less. It's not because of the genetic program as much as the response, how the individual is unseeing, how mm-hmm. their responses to the environment are disturbing their inner world, just like a government that's sending all kinds of mixed messages out. Our own world is the best example. The health of the United States, the citizens of the United States are cells in a large living organism called the United States. And the health of the citizens, the health of the cells, is directly related to what's going on in our government, in our world. So,
I see the relation. Sorry, but back to the idea of the, I have a friend who adopted a little girl from Korea, and the particular family here in America drank a lot of milk, and the Korean child was allergic to the milk and just kept throwing up in their milk, and family couldn't figure out why the kid was continually throwing up until they realized that genetically the parent had an allergy as well to milk. So does it work both ways? And actually, I'm going to have to actually have you answer that question when we come back, because we're going to go to a quick break. If you can hold on to that thought, or if you can answer it in 10 seconds or less. But the idea of can you really redesign your genetic code in terms of allergies? If you can do it with cancer, why can't you do it with allergies? So we will find that out when we come back. My guest is Bruce Lipton, cellular biologist. We're going to continue our conversation about how we can ultimately survive any type of illness, or if you actually can control it from the center of the mind, from your entire unconscious mind as well. So this is Lisa Gar. That's who I am. And you're listening to Coast to Coast. And I will be right back.